Welcome to the Haney Biz Project with Mark Haney. Mark is a serial investorpreneur and the chief dreaming officer of the Haney Biz Companies. He's working tirelessly to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution and share the inspiring stories of the region's most influential leaders. And now, here's Mark Haney.
The people that are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones that actually do. I'm here with Marcus Haney. This is the Haney Biz Project. Marcus, quick question for you. Do you know who said that quote, who that came from?
I think that was Mr. Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs, you are a great guesser. You know what? And Steve Jobs and the story of Apple is an incredible story. And I think a lot of us know that story. A lot of us carry the iPhones. A lot of us bought iPods and iPads and everything. But you know what? It's the real world stories of entrepreneurs that inspire us. Not only did Steve Jobs inspire us, but when we hear the stories of real world entrepreneurs, like the ones that we have right here in Sacramento, these stories inspire us, Marcus. These stories are the ones that also educate us. And I think at times we feel connected to the people inside these stories. These stories don't always go in a way that is smooth, straight uphill, right? A lot of times there's twists and turns and ups and downs and rocky times, and a lot of small businesses don't figure out a way to succeed and make it through the tough times. But some dig deep, figure out a way to succeed, get over the hump, and find a way to scale. And those are the stories we like to tell. And when we tell our stories, Marcus, we bring out the real, the truth, the real world stories, Marcus. Find out what they're doing, what these entrepreneurs are doing when they're at their very best. Sometimes we figure out what they're doing when they're in their downtime, but everybody's got a story. Marcus, how are you doing this morning? You have been sick a little bit lately. You are back in the saddle. Are you hanging or banging today?
Yeah, been a little under the weather, back in the saddle, ready to rock. I am banging today. Excited to hear about a little venture capital today and hear from some real-world entrepreneurs right here in the Sacramento. So we got some good guests coming
up. No question. I mean, I think so often today we hear about the term, right, how Apple and certain industries, right, they're very, they've been disrupted, right? We know the cell phone has disrupted the way we communicate, and social media has been so disruptive in the way that we communicate with one another and we get our viewing habits. And, you know, some industries are more ripe than others today for disruption. And we sent that question out in our Revolution newsletter this last week. Which industry is most ripe for disruption? What do you think, Marcus?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, you look at the biggest transportation company in the world has no vehicles.
Yeah.
The largest housing company in the world has no houses or no property.
The hotels, Airbnb, exactly.
So
Uber,
I'm not exactly sure what the next one is, but maybe it's venture capital. I don't know.
Well, we in the newsletter this week, we decided, you know, we're going to give away some Kings tickets to the Loft.
I guess I'm not getting them.
And
huh?
You are getting, no, you're close. You're close. And I don't know the answer to this, but we in the newsletter, we asked, if you come up with the best answer, we're going to give you some Kings tickets to the Loft to go see a game. And a guy by the name of Roger Akers, who you know, he responded back and he said that the banking industry was most ripe to be disrupted. And so he's going to get our tickets. He gets to go hang out in the Loft, watch some Sacramento Kings basketball.
Hey, Roger, I'll go with you, man.
Hey, yeah, I'm going to go too. Sorry about that. We're going to crash the party. But, you know, so many times we think about, you know, developing a product and that product's got to be different, right? It's got to be differentiated. And if it's different enough, maybe even create a competitive advantage. And if it's different enough, if it's strong enough, maybe even an advantage that's so strong that some people might even think it's unfair, right? You can dominate a market and even be considered disruptive. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. Today on the show, wow, we've got an all-star lineup coming up. Who is coming on the show today? We have, a little bit later in the show, we're going to meet Dr. Javed Sakhidi, the co-founder and chief medical officer of Telemed to You. And we are also going to meet The Law. Cameron Law, the executive director of Social Venture Partners of Sacramento. But coming up after the break, guess what? We get to meet a venture capitalist that gives these great ideas a chance to come to life through funding. We're going to meet Vaibhav Naguda, the managing partner at Moneta Ventures. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, brought to you courtesy of Audi Rockland. This is the Haney Biz Project.
back to the Haney Biz Project with host Mark Haney.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Comstocks Magazine and the California Backyard. I'm Mark Haney, and today I am joined by Vaibhav Naguda, the managing partner at Moneta Ventures. How you doing, Vibe?
Doing well, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me. You are pinch hitting for our main man, Lokesh. And you guys both have interesting names, right? Your last name is Naguda, right?
That
makes me think, not good enough, right? But I know that's not the case. But I know that's not the case. And then I think of Lokesh, Lokesh, right?
Yep.
He's got mo cash, so he's got a lot of cash. And you're definitely good enough. So you guys are kind of like downplaying through the names. I think that's interesting. Now, you are a venture capitalist. You are a managing partner at Moneta Ventures. Tell us about Moneta and what you do there.
Sure, Mark. Yeah, you have, to right off the bat, I mean, you got a guy who's not good at anything and a person who has no cash running venture capital.
That sets the tone.
There can't nothing be going wrong with that
you're
one.
You're at ease, right? When you walk into Moneta. You feel at ease automatically.
So on a serious note, I think fundamentally what Moneta Venture is doing here in Sacramento is what you said at the beginning of the show, Mark, which is giving ideas and people a chance to make it big and successful here in this area.
So you do that. You have venture capital. It's there for the small business person, but you focus on a specific type of small business. Talk to us about that.
True. So if you look at, we talked about people dreaming and coming up with ideas and then trying to make it big. It's a process. And if you look at that process, the early part of it is really, really hard. I mean, so you have an idea, then you need a team. And so now you have a team and an idea, but well, guess what? You need some money to make it. And you know, a lot of people will give you money when you don't need it, right? That's when you have the profit, the business is doing well, you have profits, and everybody will be lining up trying to give you money. Well, that's not when you really need it.
Okay.
When you need the money is when you think you have something good and you want somebody to believe in you. You know, take that leap of faith and say, okay, here's a chance. We're going to take a chance on you just as you're taking a chance in yourself. And that's really where the venture capital comes in. It comes in at a point when a business is very early. We typically look at businesses that are starting off. So maybe $500,000 a year in revenue to maybe $10 million in revenue. So they are more than an idea. They are more than somebody's dream. They've actually demonstrated that their idea works and that they can actually get to a customer, and there's this money cycle that has gone through. And from that point onwards, we come in, we can invest in them, and given our backgrounds, we can actually help them more than money, like just like you do here. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have a lot of back office stuff that you do for your companies. We come from entrepreneur backgrounds ourselves. So we can actually help them in more ways than money. And then our idea is to get them to the next stage where a lot of people will be lining up to give them money.
Well, let's talk about your background. You and Lokesh have incredible entrepreneurial backgrounds. Give us a sense as to your background specifically, and then how that translates into helping these portfolio companies.
Sure. I came here almost 20-some years ago from India as a consultant. I have a computer engineering background, and I came here to help companies like IBM and Intel implement a system called SAP. That was my area of expertise. Through that journey over the last 20 years, the first time I moved away from consulting is when I started working with Lokesh, and we had this company called Rapidime that we, started looking at the business side of things and helped that company grow from somewhere around $60, $70 million to a little over $350 million.
Wow.
Right? And again, that's when we came to Folsom first. Folsom became their second largest office in the country, right?
Yeah,
for a large size business. We exited out of that business, sold it to Fujitsu, which is a large Japanese company. And then we started another business, which was in exactly the same area. We're doing IT services, and we started it here in Folsom. That business, we grew from nothing to a little over $100 million over 5 years, and we exited out of it. And so, the key thing for us there was we've seen how we can take a small company and what we can do to it to make it a big, successful company. And that's been our journey. And that was the genesis of Moneta.
Well, that experience is invaluable. You get to come into some place like Moneta and work with people like yourself and Lokesh and get the funding you need. It's not just the money. I'm picturing myself as somebody with a great idea. Maybe I've got a little bit of revenue going, and I come to you. Describe to me what you look for in a guy like me, right? In an entrepreneur, somebody who's come coming to you for money, what do you look for?
It's an interesting thing, Mark. And what we've learned is there's not really one thing that will tell you what will make you successful. There isn't. There are a lot of things that will tell you what doesn't work.
Okay.
And, you know, so we know what not to do. And that's really important, right? And there are a few things that are just important, right? One is a lot of people talk about, hey, you just need a really unique product and it needs to be differentiated. And if you can have that, that's great. But, you know, there are only so many Steve Jobs in the world, you know, but everybody else needs to make a living and make it big too. And if you look at our background, we come from an IT services background where we grew businesses that were not differentiated products at all. That was pure execution. That was 100% execution in one of the most commoditized spaces you can think of. So we have a little different perspective on this. So we look at the team. We look at, hey, are you committed to this? Do you have the ability to execute? And then obviously you have to look at certain important hygiene factors. I mean, you got to do a business that makes sense. The economics of it has to work out. But fundamentally, you have to have the right team with an ability to execute.
Well, how do you tell if an entrepreneur has the ability to execute if they've only got up to, let's say, $500,000 in sales, but you know that the exit strategy is means getting them to $50 million? How do you know if that guy can do it or not?
And you don't. And that's the part about taking a chance, right? But it's not a roll of dice either. You can make a very good judgment call based on where they're coming from, what market they are going after. And how we do it is we focus on what we know. So what do we know? We know the B2B enterprise space. We know what it takes to succeed in that space. So if you're coming to us with an idea that is focused on a B2B enterprise, then that's the model that's going to help you scale. We can do a lot of checkpoints and say, yeah, you know, you got this idea. It makes sense. And we can help you connect those dots.
Do you ever invest in pre-revenue companies?
We have. We have a few. Not more as an exception than a rule.
Okay. So typically it's somebody who's driving revenue. They've got a proof of concept. They know how to make a sale, for example.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If we believe that they're on the cusp of breaking that barrier and they have a line of sight to revenue, we'll take a chance.
What do you absolutely shy away from? You meet an entrepreneur and you know right off the bat, no. What's a common mistake for an entrepreneur when he comes in to pitch?
You know, the way I look at it, you know, it's clarity, right? You don't have to know what you're talking about. It's consistency. You know, we look for consistency. You know, if we find somebody inconsistent, they say one thing, then they do another. That's important. And the most important thing is just the sheer passion and how committed are you to it. If any entrepreneur is saying, I'm doing this, oh, by the way, I also have this and that going, well, no.
If you've got a part-time job at the same time, he's not one for Moneta.
Nope, not at all. Yeah.
And thinking about what an ideal opportunity looks like for you, can you give us a success story that Moneta has been involved with?
You're going to talk to one of our success stories, right?
I knew you were going to say that. The doctor is in the house. I knew you were going to say that. But how would you describe the doctor as compared to the average entrepreneur?
Nothing average about him. I'll tell you that. And we got involved with Javed and Steve, right when we were just starting with Moneta Ventures. And it was very clear to us, just what they bring to the table. Just the sheer competency is one aspect of it. The execution, just the commitment to the execution, what they have risked to make this happen, and most importantly, what it is that they're exactly doing. I mean, they are reaching out to people who don't have access to specialist medicine, doing it using technology, and that's where the future is. And they're not doing it to cure your cough and cold. They're doing infectious diseases. They're doing psychiatry. I mean, it's not the run-of-the-mill stuff. And they're sitting right here in Roseville and doing it.
You did the perfect setup for me when Javed comes on the show. But before we get to that, just one last question. And thinking about our question of the day and which industries right now are most ripe for disruption, what are you seeing out there as the next one that's going to be disrupted?
You know, I have an opinion about that. And the way I look at it is actually it's the healthcare industry. And I'll tell you why from my perspective. perspective. There's just a lot of stuff. If you've ever been a patient or you've had somebody who's been a patient, there's too much stuff between the doctor and the patient. There's too much value lost there. Yes. In the whole processes and whatever that is. That's one aspect of the second is if you look at the adoption of technology in healthcare, I think it's behind a lot of other industries. So when you combine those two factors and you say, okay, there's a lot of disintegration that we can do here and create value, and there's a technology that's going to enable you to do it, I think that's just this huge amount of opportunity.
There's
there.
So much room for improvement in the way we take care of ourselves, the way that we get treated when we are not feeling good, and curing these horrible diseases that that we face here in this world. I want to thank you for coming on the show. We're going to bring up after the break Dr. Javed Siddiqui, the co-founder and chief medical officer of TeleMed, to you. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, courtesy of Audi Rockland and DCA Capital. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to Mark Haney, igniting the entrepreneurial revolution with the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Hub International and Legion AVS. I'm Mark Haney, and today I am joined by Javed Siddiqui, the doctor in the house, the co-founder and chief medical officer of TeleMed, to you. How you doing, Javed?
Wonderful, Mark. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here.
You bet. Thank you. And you and I think, have met once, and it was at the King's Capitalize event. You and I think were judges next to each other, and I think at that moment I realized I am sitting next to a very, very smart man, and so this is a little awkward. C student from Oakmont High School, and here I am interviewing a doctor. Give us your background, and try to dumb it down for me if you don't mind. Not your background so much, but when we get into the technical stuff, I'll need you to bring it down just a hair. So give us your background, John.
That's very kind of you to say. No, it was a great meeting you last year, and really look forward to this conversation. So again, I'm an infectious diseases physician. I had the pleasure of doing my undergraduate and graduate work at Tulane University down in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And then went to medical school at the University of Missouri in Columbia, and then residency at Cottage Hospital in Santa Barbara, and then my postdoctoral fellowship in infectious diseases at the University of California, Davis, just up the road.
Well, yes. Okay. That's your medical background. So I was a C student, as I mentioned, from Oakmont High School, so obviously a contrast. But your the way you got into business is different than a lot of people too. You were a corporate guy, right? How did that happen?
Well, I was an academic. I was okay. At the University of California, Davis, and I was incredibly fortunate to be a protege of Dr. Tom Nesbitt, who really is the father of telemedicine throughout the state of California and one of the leaders of telemedicine in the world. We wouldn't be having the access to telemedicine in the state of California if it wasn't for Dr. Nesbitt. So it was, you know, like most things in life, lucky to be at the right place at the right time and to have an incredible mentor like Dr. Nesbitt to teach me what telemedicine is and to work with him for almost a decade.
Yeah, and when I say corporate guy, I shouldn't say that. You had a good job, right? You had a good job with all the benefits and the security of what being in the UC Davis system is. And then how did you decide, you know what, I'm going to go out on my own?
You know, you're absolutely correct. I mean, I had, an incredibly supportive wife. I have four children, and I'm in this career position in the University of California system, and really was following my passion, because what had happened was, in academics, things have a life cycle, and telemedicine was reaching towards the end of its academic life cycle, and was getting ready to be kind of handed off to the private sector. And for me, I'd fallen in love with this. This is my work. This was my passion. And to just say, well, we're going to hand this off to the private sector, and we'll still be in it, but it'll mainly be a private game. I just wasn't willing to accept that. So with the support of my wife, Karen, who, she was my rock, and I can't believe that, someone would, you come home and go, hey, listen, I'm going to give up my career job, and I'm going to try to build something from scratch, yeah. An idea on a piece of paper, mm-hmm. and to have someone support me like that was invaluable. But I followed my passion, and I left a faculty position, and along with my business business partner, Steve Renard, who I'm very grateful for meeting, we started TeleMed to You in 2011. We had no clients. We had an idea. And Steve had been in the business of healthcare for a long time. I'd been in the practice of medicine. I'd been doing telemedicine. And we joined forces and opened the business. And the first day I sat there and I went, what in the world did I just do?
Aha. What was the feeling? Was it fear or was it, what went over your mind at that point? I can only imagine it must have been some fear.
Oh, absolutely. I think fear would be a very kind word. I think okay. Absolute... I was paralyzed by because my life had been so linear, right? It's undergraduate, graduate school, medical school, residency, fellowship, working in academics, a very, very linear. You knew what was coming next.
Right.
One of the things I don't think that when someone is starting off in entrepreneurship, they don't realize is that it is a blank canvas. And that blank canvas can also be a great abyss. You have to jump in and you have to learn how to swim. And, you can either be paralyzed by looking at, down into that abyss, or you can look at it and go, okay, it's going to start with one pebble, it's going to start with one rock, and then we're going to get to a brick, and we're going to build it bit by bit. And so how you approach that, I think, is something that's not talked about enough when people talk about entrepreneurship.
Yeah, it's how you decide to take that baby step and the fear factor. Okay, I'm going to back up a little bit to today, and then we'll tell the journey a little bit, but what does your company look like? What does TeleMed to You today?
Well, TeleMed to You is a 100% telemedicine-based multi-specialty clinical practice. So as Vaibhav was so kind enough to say in the previous segment, what we do is we concentrate on getting medical specialists to the patients that need them. Because, when you look at specialty care, there's a paucity of access to specialty care throughout the entire healthcare continuum, right? You need to see a dermatologist. You need to see a psychiatrist. You need to see someone like myself, an infectious disease physician. Well, there's just so many of us, and there's not enough of us to go around. I mean, when you look at my field in infectious diseases, there's less than 8,000 of us in the entire United States.
Okay.
All right? So it's an incredibly, the demand is far greater than that. So what we do is we're able to link patients with those medical specialists no matter where you are, in your own community. So you don't have to travel an inordinate amount of distance. You don't have to wait an inordinate amount of time, because we know when we can connect the patient to the medical specialist, people get better, and that helps their overall health care.
So you could be in the middle of, some small town in the middle of Oklahoma, and you go to your general practitioner, and you say, hey, I think I got something. You don't have to drive miles and miles, hundreds of miles to get to a doctor, to get to the specialist. You actually do that remotely.
Absolutely. And you know what? This is something that Dr. Nesbitt taught me a long time ago. 74% of California is considered rural.
Oh, wow.
Right? Yeah. No one thinks that. We all think about the great city centers that we have, including Sacramento, but we don't think about that 74% of California is rural. So the way I got involved in telemedicine was the fact that I was providing HIV/AIDS care to a lot of patients. And some of my patients were driving 3.5-4 hours each way to see me for a 15-minute office visit. And I look at myself and I go, I'm not that good, right? Someone is taking an entire day off of work. And if they can't drive or they're not well enough to drive, they got to get a family member who now that's lost income, right? So it's really, you're talking about families that are spending almost $500, $600, $800 to come see me for an office visit for 15 minutes.
15 minutes.
Right. And for me to say, everything's great, keep taking your medication, right?
Yeah.
That just didn't seem right. And that's when I was incredible, had the great opportunity to meet Dr. Nesbitt and start, and he said he was, he had started telemedicine in 96 and was developing this program and said, hey, we've got an opportunity to do some infectious disease. You want to do it? I said, absolutely love to. And within a few months, I was managing 250 HIV patients all throughout rural California, all through telemedicine. And we really were making a difference in these people's lives because they didn't have to leave their communities. They could go right to their own family practice physician's office, be seen right there, get the specialty care they need, and not have to be inconvenienced.
So there's a HIPAA-compliant type communication, right? You guys are in the the patient is in the office, and somehow he does a video conference with you?
Exactly. So we use HIPAA high-tech compliant systems, right? So just like the banking industry has their regulations, the healthcare industry, we have ours. cars. And so we use systems that are meet the highest degree of security standard. And yes, so they're able to come right into their own physician's office. Our specialist is able to connect with them. They're able to get the appropriate care. And that's the heart of what we do.
I have to imagine that more people get health care because of this service, right? If I'm one of those guys that has to go 8 hours and kill my day, I might just say, forget it. I can't afford to do it. I'm just not going to go.
You know what? You're absolutely correct. And the best example I can give you is that I won't name the community, but there's a community here in Northern California where the closest doctor for diabetes management, someone called an endocrinologist, was 200 miles away. Okay. So there's probably about 200-300 diabetics in this community. At best, they saw him once a year, at best, right? So these patients weren't being managed very well. So we were lucky enough to partner with the local community healthcare clinic. We put a telemedicine unit in there. We were able to connect them with an endocrinologist, right? What we saw was immediately all these patients were able to come get their diabetes care at this clinic, able to see our endocrinologist. And what we saw in a very short period of time, in about 9 months of time, all the patients had been seen at least once. We saw that patients were getting better care. And over the course of a year, we actually saw their diabetic number, something called the hemoglobin A1C, which is their average blood sugar for that group of patients, actually start to go down.
Wow. Well, I can envision from a patient standpoint, it's this huge benefit, but how does it help the doctor? Why does the doctor recommend you?
You know, and it's something that Vaibhav answered your question about that healthcare is so ripe for disruption, because for doctors, at the end of the day, a lot of times it's incredibly inefficient, right? So if I'm having to go to 3 hospitals, so I was talking to this doctor in Los Angeles, and I was like, hey, you know, you really should come work with us. And he's like, well, I go to 3 hospitals, but I got to dial down. I'm only in the car 2 hours a day. So my response was, so one day a week, no one pays you. And he goes, well, what are you talking about? I said, well, 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. So on Saturday, you're driving around for 10 hours. No one is paying you. Wear and tear on your car, wear and tear on your body.
Yeah.
And what we can do is they can be in their office and they can go to 4, 5, 6 different hospitals and they're never leaving their desk.
Wow. That's great for the employer too. The guy that's that employee, the patient, if you will. I mean, if he's showing up for work his full 40 hours or closer to it versus spending a whole day a week traveling, I mean, that's got to be huge for the economy and for that small business specifically, or large business.
Exactly. And you know, and I have to say, there's also a great environmental component to this, because we're helping to reduce that carbon footprint, taking someone 10 hours a day in their 10 hours a week in their car running around, and we're able to connect them with those same patients, but from their, you know, from a static location.
So you're solving this this enormous problem that maybe the average person might not think about in their daily lives, but when you are sick and you need to go see a specialist, you know how much it saves you. But I'm thinking to myself, you've built this incredible business, you've got the help of Moneta, but in every entrepreneurial journey, there's these forks in the road, there's these bumps. A lot of times there's these times when you're thinking, are we really going to make it? And what was the toughest thing you've experienced in this early phase of the business?
Well, you know, currently we are so incredibly fortunate to have Moneta Ventures behind us, and to have two incredible people like Vaibhav and Lokesh. I mean, just, you know, the individuals they are, more than the capital they've brought to us, just the individuals they are that have helped us have, you know, our compounded annual growth since we worked with Moneta is over 40% per year.
Wow.
So it's been a huge benefit for us. But, you know, when I started, I had the benefit of having Steve Renard as my partner, who really knew healthcare and business. But, you know, the thing about it is that one of the biggest mistakes I made is that before I started and made this leap of faith to jump into entrepreneurship, I talked to people who were successful. I didn't talk to enough people who failed.
Okay.
Right? And that was a huge mistake I made. So when times got tough, and I'm talking, you know, we met one of the requirements that Vaibhav said, are you all in? I mean, Steve and I were all into the business. And I'm talking all in as in liquidating 401ks, second mortgages on the house, not taking a paycheck for almost 5 years out of the business.
Wow.
Right? And that comes at a huge personal cost. I can tell you personally, probably one of the hardest things I've had to do is, you know, be able to have pretty serious money talks with my wife and be able to say what we can and can't do. But the thing that always gets me is that my eldest daughter, we had to delay her getting braces for a year. And it was just one of those things is to say, hon, I just can't do it right now, right? We just can't. And to have to delay that for a year. And she was great about it. She completely understood. But to me, that was one of the hardest things I ever had to do in my life.
Wow. Okay, so what's the bright spot now? Now things, you're over the hump. Does she have her braces now?
Yeah,
she has her braces. But what do you see for the future of TeleMed to you and the future for you and your partner?
Well, you know, the future for us, you know, we're really excited to be in an incredibly dynamic field where it's incredibly excited to have a tremendous partner like Minetta Ventures with us. And we see expanding growth, right? I mean, we're adding to the economy here right in the Sacramento area. We want to continue to grow. We want to continue to hire more people in all realms from the technology standpoint, to the sales and marketing standpoint, to our operational standpoint. So really adding to the economy of the local region, that's what we're excited about. And the number one thing is quality care, because I think, you know, there's a lot of people doing telemedicine. One of our absolute, you know, pillars is that we have to deliver quality. There has to be a quality component, and that's really how we're going to differentiate ourselves. And so we've done that from day one. We're going to continue to do that, and we really want to continue to meet the healthcare needs of the citizens of the state of California.
Wow, solving a huge problem, maybe in the potential realm of disruption emerging. Great stuff happening right here in Sacramento. I want to thank you very much for coming on the show to Javed and sharing your story and doing what you do right here, chasing the dream right here in Sacramento. When we return, we will be joined by the law, Cameron Law, the executive director of Social Venture Partners of Sacramento. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com. Courtesy of the Entrepreneurs Organization at Sacramento and law firm Greenberg Traurig. This is the Haney Biz Project.
And now back to the Haney Biz Project with investorpreneur Mark Haney.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of accounting firm Clifton Larson Allen. I'm Mark Haney, and today I have the law in the house, Cameron Law, the executive director of Social Venture Partners of Sacramento. How you doing, Cameron?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show, Mark.
Thank you for coming down. And I know that Social Venture Partners is not something that's a household name yet in Sacramento, but you're in the process of making everybody know about Social Venture Partners. So what is your organization about?
Yeah, definitely. SVP is what we call it. Social Venture Partners is a community of philanthropists who have really come together to take this venture capital approach to philanthropy. And what this is allowing us to do is really reinvent the way we think about philanthropy and giving back to our community. And so how we do that is we bring in partners at various donation levels, and we pool that like a venture capital firm, and then we facilitate an investment grant process, which we fund a portfolio of educational nonprofits within the region. And we also have a variety of programs that we offer that facilitate this social innovation that's occurring in Sacramento.
So I am a social venture partner, and I love what you guys do. And I love that you're empowering these nonprofits to figure it out. We all know that, I don't know what it is, 9 out of 10 startups fail in the first 5 years or so. And nonprofits are no different. In fact, they may even be a little bit more likely to not get themselves over the hump because they're, in many cases, there's no central leadership. There's all kinds of reasons why nonprofits just aren't sustainable over the long haul. But you, along with these business people, invest money into them to help them grow. But you also invest some extra expertise, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. No, that's a great point, Mark. Is one thing that we really do with this model is we're able to leverage our partnership bases who come from an entrepreneurial ecosystem as well as the corporate sphere. And we pull on that expertise that they have. And so what we call this is capacity building. So we bring in their expertise and bring this into the nonprofit sphere and really leverage those dollars by building out business processes and organizational structures and allowing those nonprofits to really build themselves up and have that scalable and sustainable impact.
It sounds very similar to what Moneta is doing with for-profit companies, right? You're investing money, you're helping them grow, helping them to scale and succeed. Give us us an example of what a success story is for SVP.
Yeah, definitely. So a success story for SVP is really bringing in a new portfolio company, which would be our investee,
okay.
And really seeing that they're at, you know, this certain amount of impact. And then once we've given them funding for 3 to 5 years, really just seeing that impact grow within the region. So that could be from, you know, if we're helping an organization try and solve third grade reading proficiency levels. So looking at that data at the front end and saying, okay, this is where we're at. Once we've worked with this organization who's working maybe in a microcosm of Sacramento, how have those reading levels grown within the region or in that specific area?
Well, when I think of venture capital too, I'm thinking about getting these companies so that they are financially stable. They can stand on their own. They can thrive on their own. And I'm wondering, can you give us an example of like what problems typically nonprofits face in not being able to get out of their own way at times?
Right. Yeah, definitely. I think one thing that we provide is that sustainable funding. I think a big part of the nonprofit sphere is really that trying to bring on new funders year after year, and that takes a huge process to bring in funders, and they're not focusing necessarily on their impact in their general operations per se. So by being that vehicle that provides some of that sustainable funding as well as the organizational processes on the back end, that they no longer really have to focus as much on the fundraising. They can focus on the impact that they're creating in the community and really start to develop new ways of doing that.
Yeah, I've seen nonprofits where they go around and ask for donations, or maybe they hold an event and throw a party, basically make people come in to go there. But your nonprofits are actually delivering some kind of service to the community that typically has a way of being self-generating.
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah, so I think to the point is, as a VC model for this, is we don't necessarily get a return on investment. The return that we get is the increase in impact in the region. So there's not necessarily a takeaway of, oh, we got a return of this certain dollar investment. The return that we get as a group of partners and as a community is a greater level of impact pushing the city forward.
So if I'm an executive director of a nonprofit and I want to get some help from Cameron Law and SVP and the social venture partners, I got to go pitch my story. I got to go pitch my opportunity to you. How does that work?
Yeah, so we have two kind of programs that we offer. One is our SVP Fast Pitch, which is we have going on March 8th. And this is basically bringing some of the for-profit entrepreneurial ecosystem into the for-profit. And so we offer basically an accelerator program and a demo day for 20 nonprofits in the region. So starting in August, we receive a number of applications. We had 46 applications this last year, and we break that down into 20 nonprofits that go through this cohort. So starting in December, we have a variety of workshops that help illustrate their, you know, what, how does data show your impact, and how can you use that in your pitch to really bring in funders and scale that impact in the region. And then we facilitate a competition, which they then are broken down into finalists, which are 10 people who are going to be pitching at the Golden One Center on March 8th. And that's our big fast pitch event. And so what this really is just a social innovation program that's really elevating what's happening in the region within the nonprofit sphere.
And you guys were crazy enough to invite me to be a judge for the SVP. So I'm appreciative of that. It's fun. You want to hang out with me at Golden One Center, March 8th. I think it's in the evening, about 5:30, 6 o'clock.
You got it.
Great time. I've been doing this. I haven't been judging for, this is my first year judging, so we'll see how this goes. But it is fun. It is rewarding. It is interesting to see some of the most successful nonprofits in our area, especially the smaller ones, almost like the entrepreneurial nonprofits of Sacramento, pitching at the Golden One Arena. And some of them get recognized, and it ends up being a huge benefit for them.
Yeah, definitely. I think one thing that to speak to the program is it's really exciting just to see the growth that some of these nonprofits have seen. And most of you guys that have come through the entrepreneurial ecosystem and gone through accelerators yourself, you can really see how your pitch has evolved from day one to the end of the program. And for me, that's almost the most rewarding, is seeing these nonprofits go through this along with their day job. This is not just, they're out there fundraising on their own, they're out there making impact, but they're doing this on their side. And really just seeing them come out on March 8th at the Golden One Center and just elevating themselves and the program that they have and just pitching their organization is just an exciting thing to see.
It is. It's amazing how when we get faced with the task of pitching something, it hones our message in a way that it helps out with our customers, it helps out with our suppliers, it helps out with all our stakeholders as we we begin to hone in our message, maybe even dial it down into an elevator pitch that that can really make molecules move for the business. So, okay, last question. So we asked about disruption, right? So what is the most, you're a business guy, you're an MBA. What do you see as the most ripe industry for disruption here today?
I think, I guess looking at Sacramento, I think the biggest area for disruption is going to be the agricultural sector. I think, especially here in Sacramento, I think we have a lot of ag around us, and especially in the state of California, we're one of the biggest exporters of agriculture. And that doesn't necessarily look at the genes of different plants that we're growing or the crops. It's also talking about drone technology that's being used to survey land and just really looking at the different things that go around the agricultural sector, not just the pure growing of crops, but kind of the surveillance and different things that may be coming into fruition here.
It's amazing. You know, my mom always told me when I was a kid to surround myself with smart people. And today, there is no question, I have found a way to do that. Hopefully, a little bit of that brain power rubs off on the old man. I want to thank you for coming on the show today, Cameron. Next week, we have Congressman, a man who is running for Congress, Mr. Andrew Grant. He is an international businessman. He is a Marine, and he is going to do some great things for our country. But we are also going to have a real-world entrepreneur alongside of Mr. Aaron Klein of Riskalyze. When we return, I'll have my takeaways, some closing thoughts on what the industries are most ripe for disruption. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, courtesy of Ethan Conrad Properties and financial advisor Stifel Financial. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back for Mark's takeaways from today's Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Silver's HR and Five Star Bank. I'm Mark Haney, and I'm back here with Marcus Haney. We've been talking about disruption. We've been talking to some smart guys that are in the process of changing the world. Marcus, closing thoughts?
Yeah, I was really excited and interested to hear about how Moneta started and how they got together and really helping those innovative companies. I think there's a lot of good stuff on the horizon here for Sacramento companies.
No question. You know, and I think about, you know, if you don't have the brain power, the creative ideas, some of the, you know, the Bill Gates or some of these guys that are developing these incredible products, well, maybe you need to make, you know, make up for it a little bit in your work ethic or find what you are. We all have something inside us that is great. We all have something inside us that is innovative. And if you dig a little deeper, maybe you can look at the work ethic inside you. Maybe you work at the attitude and the team building inside of you and match up with somebody who's got the incredible dream and the incredible product knowledge. And maybe the group of you can take it to the next level. And I think that's what we're seeing at Telemed to you. We have some people here who have teamed up for some passion. We see that definitely with social venture partners. And you know what? I think that's what we do at Haney Business Ventures as well. And just a short story about disruption. You know, we all talked about the beginning of disruption is starting with a differentiated product, and then you find a way to create a competitive advantage if you can. And some are lucky enough to figure out a way to come up with an unfair competitive advantage. And my story goes back to the 80s here. I'll make this a quick story because we only have a few minutes left. VCRs. We all remember Beta and VHS and the big war between Beta and VHS. And my dad had a TV shop, and we started selling VCRs, and where most of the country was selling VHS, right? We know that that was a big one. We chose to focus on Beta. Why? Because we had an idea up our sleeve. We were going to create video stores. In fact, we did create video stores. And these video stores were differentiated. And you know what was so different about our video stores is they were filled with Beta movies. And most people would say that's crazy, a la Steve Jobs maybe. But we had something up our sleeve. See, we had bought Beta VCRs, right? The one with the smaller tape and the one that was less popular. And we flooded the market with these Beta VCRs. We sold thousands and thousands of Beta VCRs here in Sacramento. In fact, Sacramento is considered like a 1% market. We held like 6% of the Beta VCR sales for the nation right out of Sacramento in the 80s. Most people don't know that, but guess what? We had like 10% of the Beta video rentals, and it was because because we chose to do something different. We flooded the market with beta VCRs, put beta videotapes in our stores, the movies, and when the people went to the competition, they didn't have beta tapes, but they were stuck with that beta machine, and there was only one place to get their beta movies, and it was our video stores. We grew the video stores up to 12 stores. Ultimately, we were disrupted ourselves by Netflix and some of the other technologies that have come in and help shape the way we view movies today. But you know what? We had our window of competitive advantage. We seized it, and it sort of put us in the game to launch the next part of our lives. So Marcus, thinking about how we salute the people who are taking the risk, people like the doctor, people like the venture capitalists, people like the people over at Social Venture Partners, these are the people that are putting their money and their time where their mouth is, and they are doing what they can to change the world. So a special salute to all those fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, our way of life, to those out there that are chasing the fight of entrepreneurship. It is not always easy. And to the 13 stripes and to the 50 stars and to the one big American disruptive force, always worth fighting for. Yours. Never above you. Never below you.
Always by your side.